Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes. I'd like to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. AFR.net, any podcast platform, or at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, my book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now available on Audible. So come join us at Sandy Rios 24/7, and remember, God's Velvet Hammer, available at Audible.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, October the 16th, 2024. Again, thank you for listening to AFR. Joining me in studio this morning is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Wesley Wildman.
Good morning.
And Fred Jackson.
Howdy.
So, fellas, we got a lot to talk about. As I say, it's always good in our talk show to have things to talk about. And we've got a countdown to election day, right, Fred?
20 days.
Is that what it is?
20 days.
Wow. Yesterday was 3 weeks out.
Yep.
Now we're inside of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know what? I wish this could last longer.
We can just end the season.
I think so. I think people enjoy this. You know, all the...
I don't think you're fooling anybody.
Huh? My email box will be glad. My email inbox will be happy when this is all over.
You think they're going to stop asking for money after the election, Tim?
I don't think so.
Well, there's always another election.
That's your dream. That would be your hope.
My email, I'm not kidding. I get political appeals right now in my email inbox. I left my office probably 6 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I've gotten three or four.
6 minutes. What do you get a day? About 100 a day?
Yeah. Something like that. What about you?
The problem, I don't get that many, but I do get a lot. I'll tell you what I found out the other day. I was having a little bit of a problem with my computer. Had IT up to my office, and they said, hey, well, let's check your spam folder, your junk mail folder, and see what's in there.
Sweet. And your wife sent you all those to-do lists that you didn't do.
No. It was filled with stuff that I had just never seen, and the spam folder got it. So
did its job.
It was doing its job. Your problem, Tim, is that your email address is on political lists.
Yeah.
So some of those folks, they sell them.
Yeah.
We don't do that with our email lists.
Yeah.
But
I know
your name's out there, and you can just kiss peace and quiet goodbye.
Yeah, that's
how it is. Allison, my wife, she gets the text. Oh, there's another one. She says, "There's another
worse. text is worse. Yeah, that's worse.
I think so.
Text. She gets text. Anyway, it should be over. Do you ask for money after an election?
There's another election coming up, or another
26
cause.
Is just around the corner. Right.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. Right.
And depending on what happens. You know, you're going to have to either support the new incoming administration, yeah, or you got to get ready to fight the old one.
Right.
Yep.
All right. So a lot to talk about today on the program. This is, again, Wednesday, October the 16th. We are going to be here, Fred, for election night coverage. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Going to be absolutely exciting, starting at 6:00 Central Time on election night. The polls, of course, on the eastern side of the country, 7:00 there, will be closing in several key states like Pennsylvania, like Michigan, North Carolina. So we'll be looking at those right off the bat on election night. So the crew will be, Tim, you'll be here. It'll be here. Wesley will be here. Walker will be here. And I'll be along for color commentary.
We're going to be offering some astute political analysis.
Yeah.
It will be astute.
Huh?
Yes.
If it's not astute,
why bother?
Why bother? That's our motto.
Now, I will say this, and we'll be up here for 5 or 6 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. And one year, I don't know if it was 2016, but one year we were here past midnight because there was a lot of things going on. And I did put in a request this year for the last couple of elections. I'm not pointing fingers because I don't know who was in charge, but we had chick food up here. Okay, we had salads and casseroles.
Well, yeah.
And I put in my request. I said, I want football food.
Yes. Right.
I want wings and that kind
of
thing.
Yes, yes. If it ain't blocking an artery, it ain't worth it.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? That's my motto.
If I'm going to get all upset about what's going on,
we're
going
to eat good.
It better be something, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Better be something.
It better be something that sticks to your ribs.
Yes. It better be
and everywhere else.
Can food be astute?
Food can't be astute.
Food can be astute.
But you says no. You say no. You say yes.
Astute means intelligent and insightful.
Right. Well,
I don't want any food serious. That's smarter than me.
Well, Ed makes a good point. I changed my mind. You don't want astute food.
No.
So, folks, for more of this,
this is what you're going to get on election night.
No, we'll get. Listen, we all come prepared. I come prepared with electoral maps and historical analysis and all the Senate races. And I mean, we come prepared to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I say, we're starting at 6 o'clock Central because we're looking at Pennsylvania, we're looking at North Carolina, Michigan. The races are so close, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on. Look at the latest polls, folks. We're talking about 1-point margins in most of these places. There has been quite a radical change just in the last 10 days or so. So it's super close right now. And tonight is one of those pivotal nights during the campaign because Vice President Kamala Harris is sitting down with Bret Baier of Fox News. The debates so far have all been ABC, CBS, CNN, all of that sort of thing. The networks where Kamala Harris and the Democrats feel comfortable. All right. But tonight, Kamala Harris is sitting down with Bret Baier. That'll begin at 5 o'clock Central Time. So it should be interesting. This morning, Bret Baier was on Fox and Friends. He was asked by Brian Kilmeade whether he's going to be fact-checking Kamala Harris. Here's how that conversation went. Cut one.
She keeps on bringing up the president's calling for a bloodbath if he loses, dictator for a day, the Charlottesville situation, and putting kids in cages.
Project all these are,
all these are inaccurate characterizations of what the president was saying. Says it over and over again. As an interviewer, you're not a moderator, you're an interviewer. When she says something inaccurate about her opponent, are you going to feel compelled to correct?
Fact check.
It's a different thing. You're not a moderator. And a moderator, you're trying to stay out of it, let the candidates kind of do their own fact checking. Ideally, you don't want to be the story. In an interview, it's one-on-one. And if you go down those roads, it's not about defending Donald Trump. It's about defending, the accuracy of the statements.
The truth.
So, we'll see how it goes. Right. But I think that I'd probably step in.
Why is Harris doing an interview with Bret Baier?
I have a theory about this.
Theorize.
All right. There are, as we've talked about, I was looking here on CNN. Here's the headline. Harris will join over 100 Republicans in Pennsylvania. The headline just above it, Harris's Fox appearance is an attempt to give Republicans dissatisfied with Trump a reason to vote Democrat. Here's what I think. This is a gamble, though, for her. Okay, first of all, it's a gamble because she could have a disastrous interview and could sink her chances. But she knows, and Democrats know, that while they see support, for example, amongst black men slipping for Kamala Harris, she may be able to reverse, flip the table and draw Republicans to her, Republicans who don't like Trump and who might sit out. You have this group, Evangelicals for Harris. Okay. I think she's going on. If she has a really good interview, she might convince Republicans who are on the fence to give her a second look.
Wesley, what do you think about Ed's theory?
Could be. I think a little different. I think that Harris sat by. I don't know if she was purposefully trying to do this, but there was it appeared to be an attempt when she first entered when she was given the opportunity, I guess, to run for president.
You mean when they kicked Biden out?
When they kicked Biden out. I got the impression that she was trying to do the basement campaign and just stay at, you know, the least amount of interview. But she reached a point where she was criticized enough by both people, but both sides, that you got to do something. And so she began doing the interviews and town halls, and that went from her numbers being flat line or a slight bump after the convention to now they're starting to drop ever since she started doing town halls and interviews and answering questions about what you would do or what you have done as a VP. And so as a result of that, I think now she sees the numbers going down, and she thinks that the more interviews, more she can do, maybe she can recover that. Because now that she's dipped down, you can't stay neutral. You can't back off and not do interviews.
That's true.
Because now that she's entered that phase, so I think she's in an attempt to try to recover some numbers.
She and her campaign.
I don't know about Republicans,
right?
But
she and her campaign know she's behind Trump in the swing states, and so
she would have been better taking the criticism of just not doing anything. The basement. Biden did.
Yeah.
She would have done better.
The reason that she's going to do an interview on Fox with Bret Baier, which is high risk for her, but is because it's risk reward.
Right.
Yeah. But
what's the reward? Well, I mean, why do an interview with a Republican leaning Bret Baier?
I agree. If I were her, I wouldn't do it if I were her campaign. But I think they think, kind of like what you're saying and Wesley's alluding to, she needs something to boost her numbers back up. And so if she can cut into, if she can get on Fox News with Bret Baier and do a really good job,
yeah,
then that will help her campaign, and that will say she went into the lion's den.
Yeah.
She took on a conservative commentator, and she came out and she did well.
There's more to gain for her than to lose, I think, just because she's so far down. Yeah. She's dropped. She ever since she got in the public figure, her numbers have dropped quite a bit.
Well, and I'll say this: she had she was helped by her debate against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. She did much better than most people expected. She sounded coherent. I don't remember a word salad. She wasn't very specific, of course. She never is. She handled that moment well, and she got a bump from it. And I think that here's the gamble. If she has, like you guys are saying, if she has a really good interview with what a lot of people would expect is a more hostile interview situation, she can come out and say, listen, I'll have no problem with Vladimir Putin. I'll have no problem with Iran. See, I can handle this kind of pressure.
Yeah.
Brad, what do you think?
Well,
sorry to cut you off.
No. Okay.
There's one other aspect to this that I've heard some people voice is Bret Baier going to be tough? Bret Baier is not some of the other anchors at Fox who tend to be really tough. Bret Baier is kind of a armchair guy, very kind of low key. He's not as tough as some of the others have been on the Democratic Party on Kamala Harris, and so there's some nervousness amongst conservatives. Will he really go at her when, for example, she says, "We offered a solution to the border.
Yeah,
we had that bill."
He will. I think he will.
Yeah. Is he going to call her on that?
He's more of an old school journalist.
Yeah. Ted Koppel type.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't expect he's not going to be like Greg Gutfeld.
No.
Or some of these folks who would be more likely to be sarcastic, harsher edge. I think he's going to do. I think Ted Koppel's a perfect example of that. That style of old school journalist. He's going to be polite, let her answer, and then when he comes back, he's not going to be like we saw with who was the lady who was interviewing J.D. Vance. Remember how
Martha Raddatz.
Yeah. She was arguing with J.D. Vance. I don't think you're going to see that this guy.
You guys were talking about that she's been falling behind in the polls, and in one area is with black males.
Right.
She's falling behind. So that's why it was interesting yesterday. She went on with podcaster Charlemagne, And I'm going to play you one of the questions. He asked about the border. He confronted her on the
He's a Democrat.
But he's also been a little bit peeved, quite frankly, when with saying the Democrats just assume.
Right.
It was Joe Biden's, if you're, you know, you ain't black if you don't vote for me.
Yes, right.
You know, he got very upset about that. He's the same podcaster. Anyway, she goes on with Charlemagne yesterday, and he asked her about the border policy, and he was very direct. Cut number four.
Doesn't the Biden administration have to take some blame for the border, though? A lot of the blame? Because, I mean, the first 3 years, y'all did get a lot of things wrong with the border.
No, Charlemagne, first thing we dropped was a bill to fix the broken immigration system, which, by the way, Trump did not fix when he was president.
There were no border security measures in that bill. Again, like you just said, it was all about amnesty for those people that are currently here. So, right. Again, when you look at that, that's the reason that Border Patrol agents right now just don't feel like their job means anything. That's why people are looking at leaving if she gets elected again. We all want to be able to feel like our job means something that we're able to accomplish. The right. joke right now is that there were the Welcome Patrol, not the Border Patrol, but the Welcome Patrol.
Yeah, that that voice at the end there was Brandon Judd, and he is a former head of the border agents.
Was he on Charlemagne's show?
No. He was responding this morning to Fox and Friends to that exchange. But I don't think Bret Baier will allow her to get away with what she did.
No, that's a good point.
I don't either. Listen, don't be fooled by Harris when she says she's going to say it probably to Bret Baier. I don't know if he'll call her out. When she says, she said the first thing we dropped, and let me just say to Harris, she dropped a lot, but the first thing she dropped, she's talking about when they first got into office, the first thing they did was try to offer to fix the broken immigration system. That's what she called it, right? You know what she called it? Listen. In politics, and this works true with Republicans too, they can do it to you. It's euphemisms oftentimes. Yeah. It's you have to figure out what did they mean by what they just said, because they didn't say the right words if they meant to say it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, Ed?
Right.
So she's going to say what Democrats emphasize when they say, quote, fix the broken immigration system is, and they'll say this, pathway to citizenship. So, listen, the vast majority of Americans, I believe this, we don't care about no doggone. Now, I know that's bad English, but it's about to work.
Okay.
No doggone pathway to citizenship. Right. We're not here to talk about that. Mm-hmm. I don't care about that. You know what Americans care about? Shut the door.
Yeah.
Shut the door.
Yeah,
people are flooding in through the door. Shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you shut the door, and then we'll come back maybe and talk about what to do with all these people you've let into our house.
Oh yeah.
Okay. But all she wants to talk about, you'll hear her probably tonight. We're gonna. I can't mimic her voice, but
that's a good thing. We don't want that.
I know that.
Even if you could do it accurately,
yes, sir.
We're weird enough.
I'm with Wesley.
Okay. Well, we don't want a pathway. Anyway, we're not here to talk about a pathway to citizenship right now. We're talking about closing the door.
Right.
Okay. So anyway. And
the comprehensive immigration bill that she probably mentioned as well.
She mentions Trump stopped it.
Trump stopped that right there. There's nothing that they've done, they meaning the Biden administration, there's nothing that they've done and she's done while she's been VP that stops the problem.
That's what I'm saying. It shuts the door.
Yeah, there's nothing they've done that shuts the door, which is the problem.
Yes. And let me just say this, and we'll wrap this particular topic up here. I was reading yesterday a story, I think it was in the New York Post, and this was quoting two or three high officials in the Border Control office. I forgot what the Border Control. Anyway, they were saying that if Harris is elected, it's going to be mass resignations.
Yeah.
Did you guys see this?
I did. Yeah, thousands.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep. Thousands.
Because they're already under duress for not being able to do their job, and they're being scrutinized, and they've just become the welcome wagon.
Yeah.
Is all they're doing. So if Trump is not elected and Harris is elected, it's going to be rest. And there may be people to fill their jobs, but they were saying, you know who they're going to be? They're going to be 20-year-olds with no experience.
Yeah.
Who are just going to help they're going to be ineffective at all.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking about Harris appearing, Vice President Harris appearing on Brett Baer on Fox News tonight with a one-on-one interview. I'm surprised she's doing it, but we'll see how she fares.
How long an interview is it? Is it an hour?
A half hour, I'm told.
Half hour, 30
that's
minutes.
That's all you want, bro.
And Fox is saying there will be, it's going to be pre-recorded, played back, though, in its entirety.
Not like CBS.
There's no editing going. They're committing themselves. There's not going to be any editing. What is done in the live record is what you're going to see tonight at 5.
Isn't Trump doing an interview, too, today? A big interview with Harris Faulkner?
Yes. Harris Faulkner and former President Trump sat down in Georgia yesterday. It's being played back right now. It's on the air right now. It's being played back. The audience was only women. That's all.
That's kind of discriminatory, isn't it? I'm disappointed to hear that.
Like you couldn't even tongue in cheek, though, right?
What?
That's a voting block, so they wanted to get their take.
So you're telling me if we had a audience with all men, that would be acceptable?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let me play you a little bit of that because it was recorded yesterday. So let me play you a little bit of exchange. A mom at this town hall meeting with Harris Faulkner, Fox host, and former President Trump, being asked about immigration policy. Cut number 9.
My son is a Georgia Bulldog. He was on campus the day Lincoln Riley was murdered. Mm. You know, terrifying for all those kids, right? I wanted to know, like, how quickly in a sanctuary city, like they're calling Athens, Georgia, how quickly can you remove those threats to our society so that our children can go out on a run, as they rightfully should be able to do, in a park in the daytime by themselves?
We can do things in terms of moving people out. We can move them out of the sanctuary cities. We're going to end all sanctuary cities in the United States, and we're going to go back to normalcy, and we're going to have law and order.
How do you do that?
No,
he can't do that.
He can't. Here's the problem. Now, you could get Congress to pass laws, but as the law currently stands, the federal government cannot force cities or states to do federal work. And that's the opposite of a sanctuary city like Athens, Georgia. The reason it's a sanctuary city, they say, they don't come out and call anyone a legal immigrant, but they say, if you are here and you want to come to Athens, you go ahead. If you get arrested for something, we're not turning you over to ICE. We're not letting the federal government know, and we're not going to arrest you.
We're going to protect you from the feds.
We're going to protect you from the feds. The federal government cannot force Athens, Georgia, to do federal work.
With all due respect, Trump can't do anything about sanctuary cities.
Not the way I understand it, not the way the law is now. Now, if the federal government if Congress wants to pass a law,
they're not going to.
I doubt it. That fines a city for.
Well, they might do it if the Republicans take over the House of Representatives.
Yeah,
that could, and the Senate. That could.
And I'm not sure it's constitutional if they passed a law. So you're going to have to find a different way to get. Now, President Trump was put in a tough spot there because that murder on the campus and those kinds of murders going on across the country, that was a mom whose son was going to the school when this happened.
Yes.
Heart-wrenching things. And so the president had to say something.
Well, if I were him, and I didn't hear the whole interview, Trump may have said this, but if I were Trump, I would have said, he shouldn't have been here in the first place. And the reason he was here in the first place is because Biden and Harris don't give a rip about our border.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's the answer.
That's the short answer. Yep.
That's the short answer. The sanctuary city issue is complicated, and I don't think it's hard to solve. Now, Trump did try something, it seems to me, during his first administration to say, if you're a sanctuary city, you don't get money from. Remember that?
There is that leverage.
Huh? Yeah.
You'd have to do something like that.
But I've forgotten how effective that was. Listen, Trump's desire is to control the border, and if it were up to him, he would end sanctuary cities, but it's more difficult than just, I'm going to do it.
Right.
You know, yeah. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Weilman.
I'm just one man, he said, excusing himself. What can I do about all of this? You know, I thought about his philosophy, and the more I thought about it, the more I pitied him. I'm just one man, just one man, just one. It was an easy way for him to excuse himself, because he was like every other person ever born, just one person. He thought that he'd been shortchanged. He considered himself ineffective because he was only one person. Suppose everyone should take his attitude. It would be a real tragedy, wouldn't it? Well, fact about the matter is that too many have taken that attitude. That's the reason we need to take a look at history a little. Martin Luther was just one person, but he was one person who called the church to repentance and changed the face of the whole world. When he hung those 95 theses on that little All Saints church door in obscure Wittenberg on October the 31st, 1517, he had no idea they could or would change the course of literally millions of people. But he was doing what he, one person, could to cure what he considered to be a great wrong. Russell Conwell was one man with one speech which he called Acres of Diamonds, and in which he told about finding treasures where you are. He gave that speech more than 6,000 times. And yet that one man, with that one speech, founded what today is Temple University and literally put thousands of youngsters through college. Florence Nightingale was just one person. At the age of 17, she heard the voice of God calling her into the nursing profession, a profession made up at that time of drunks and prostitutes. She faced the greatest opposition to her calling from within her own family, and her decision to follow her dream caused a great split in their relationship. But because of her dedicated decision, she made the field of nursing one with a high and holy calling and one widely respected. Gandhi was just one person with a great dream that freedom could be won for his beloved India without the use of violence. He was one person who believed that the most powerful weapon one has for fighting wrong were a just cause and lots of love. And he was right. There was still another who was just one person against the whole world, one person rejected, mistreated, misunderstood, hated, and crucified. But not once did he excuse himself from some task, even a cross, because he was just one person. He never murmured, never whimpered, never refused to try because he was just one person. And today, millions have found salvation through that one person. His name, of course, is Jesus of Nazareth. I'm just one person, you say. Well, my friend, that's all it takes to change the world and to make it a better place in which to live. Don't you think it's about time you got busy?
This has been My Turn with Don Weilman, a production of the American Family Association.
A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not extinguish. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow weak or discouraged before he has established justice on the earth. In his law, the islands will put their hope. Isaiah 42, 3 and 4.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Wesley, and Fred, we thank you for listening to AFR. You can watch the show on our Facebook page, Today's Issues, the Facebook page. We also are on YouTube and have our own live video streaming service. Do we not, Ed?
We do. Stream.afa.net. Stream.afa.net. Lots of great resources there. There are movies. There are shorter documentaries. It's filled with Impact Series.
Infomercials?
No infomercials.
No infomercials?
Not that I know of. Okay. Cultural institutes. There are just all kinds of great resources for educating and getting informed so that we can be informed and active citizens.
Yeah, amen. Well, joining us now is our colleague Abraham Hamilton III, who is a host of the Hamilton Corner each Monday through Friday here on American Family Radio from 5 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Abe is a Central Time, I should say, 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time. Abe hosts the show, The Hamilton Corner, here on AFR, and he's also a constitutional attorney. And Abe, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Abe, we were talking about President Trump yesterday or today, whenever it aired, received a question from a woman on the interview with Harris Faulkner about sanctuary cities and whether he could do anything about it because she was citing the murder of the young lady, Lincoln Riley, in Athens, Georgia, that shocked the nation a few months ago, killed by an illegal alien. And so that brought up the question to us about sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. Because President Trump was saying he was going to do something about it, but Ed and I were saying as much as he may want to, don't think he can. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, in the bottom line, when you get to what a sanctuary city and a sanctuary state is, it is a state or a city or municipality that has decided that it specifically will refuse to cooperate with federal law enforcement as it pertains to notifying them when there is a criminal illegal alien in their midst. And that's what it comes down to.
Did you ever have that? Would you ever have that in your law practice when you were working for the district attorney's office?
Oh, this is something I did every single day. So what happens when in the two district attorney's office, I worked in Harris County District Attorney's Office and the Jefferson Parish District Attorney's Office in the New Orleans metropolitan area, is that when you get a new case, I'm the prosecutor, so I'm the lawyer in court bringing the case to court. When I get a new case, my investigator would run a criminal history on the defendant, and that criminal history would include an indication of citizenship. As a matter of routine, when I say routine, I mean every day, every case, as soon as I get a notice of a lack of citizenship, we would have what's called an ICE hit. So it would be my job to notify the Department of Justice in my locality that, hey, we have an illegal alien in our local jail. All right, you guys need to be aware, and I will correspond with you throughout the process of this case's prosecution so that you can confer with me and let me know when y'all coming to pick this guy up. You know, and so that's something you did every day with a bunch of cases. It happened more frequently.
Okay, so you did that as your role, yes, in New Orleans and in Houston. But a city like Athens, Georgia, or a number of other cities, Los Angeles, other places.
Or the whole state of California under Kamala Harris, by the way.
Refuse to cooperate with ICE. In other words, yes, they wouldn't do what you just did. Okay, yes, let me ask you this question. Okay, let's say that California has said we're a sanctuary city. We're not going to cooperate with immigration. What's ICE short for?
Immigration Customs.
Immigration Customs and Enforcement.
Okay, they're the ICE. I think everybody knows that they're the federal agency that would come and pick somebody up and deport them. Okay,
yeah,
ICE. Okay, so my question is, a state like California, a city like Athens, Georgia, and other places in the country that call themselves sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, and they're going to say we're not going to cooperate with the federal government when it comes to deportation of criminals, even. My question would be, they do that in the name of what? What higher good is there to these people that would overrule deporting criminals?
You're asking me?
Yes, sir. I'm asking you. Go ahead.
Defend this.
There is indefensible. There's no higher good. The bottom line is that people, that they would say that they don't believe even criminal aliens. And that's what I think the listeners should know very well. We're talking specifically about people who have committed additional crimes in the United States of America. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
We're not talking about only the crime of illegal entry.
Right.
We're talking about people who enter our justice system because they've committed crimes in America, from low-level misdemeanors all the way up to felonies. Now, early on in this whole conversation, you had some that were saying that we don't think illegal aliens who commit low-level misdemeanors should be deported. But you have sanctuary states and sanctuary cities. They're not even notifying ICE about major felony offenders. That was the remarkable about-face that Eric Adams had in New York. First, he was all on the bandwagon of sanctuary city. Then he realized, some of these illegal aliens are committing murder. Some of these illegal aliens are burglarizing and committing armed robberies and things of this nature. We need to be able to deport them, you know. And so, frankly, there is no higher good. It is just.
I know there's not a higher good position. Reasonably, but the secular progressives or regressives, as you call them, these whacked out far lefties are going to say, I'm guessing they're going to say nobody is should be called illegal. Even if they're a criminal, they should have the right to remain in our country. And we should pay for their incarceration instead of sending them back. Because if you send them back and they're a brown person, that's a racist. I mean, I'm grasping at straws here, but I'm trying to think what the liberals' justification would be for not cooperating with the law. And I would also say this. I would say to somebody like Harris, if I could ask it to defend sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, I would say, so you're telling me there is a time and place where civil disobedience is acceptable to you, namely states and cities saying we're not going to follow federal law. That's what you're saying. Is that
you're absolutely right. And it's important for people to know. So like in the process I described earlier. So let's say when I'm prosecuting in Harris County, I get a case. A guy is accused of committing armed robbery. I'm prosecuting that case. I notify ICE. What happens with ICE is that they obtain dual jurisdiction and they would begin removal procedures. So it's not even like, you know, automatic, you're just kicked out of the country right at that point. There's due process on the federal side as well to say, is there any basis for you to be in this country? Oh, no, you are illegal. And so the removal proceedings would happen contemporaneously with the prosecution of the case that I'm handling in the county district court system.
All right, go ahead, Wesley.
Yeah, I was going to say, with all the differences and even divisions between the Republicans and the Democrats, and now, historically, this is the first time in history where the majority of Americans support deportation, okay? With all that said, you would think that the common ground, you can, again, there's, understand the differences between the parties on allowing people to come through the southern border unvetted, the Democrats versus, I get the difference there, but the common ground, and should be a hard yes for everybody, is when someone's here illegally, okay, take the illegal part out, now that they've committed a crime and they're not supposed to be here, how is it that we can't agree that those people, if you've got a criminal record, should go back to the country that they came from? You would think that would be common ground. Even if you disagree on open border, closed border, if you've come here and you've committed a violent crime, I don't know how hard it is for it.
Yeah, I would say probably that's going to split the Democrat Party. You're probably going to get 50% of Democrats who are going to say, I agree with that. They commit a violent crime. They got to be deported.
Sure.
Although a caveat to that, I would say, is I don't think so. I think if they commit a violent crime, they need to go to our prison and stay there.
Well, I'm talking about after the fact.
Because they could go home to their home country and be let off scot-free and never have to pay for their crimes. Ed, you were going to ask a question?
Yeah, Abe, just one additional question that's tied to the issue of illegal immigration, but isn't about sanctuary cities so much. But I'm looking at USA Today article. It says the U.S. Justice Department sued Virginia Friday to prevent it from canceling voter registrations in violation of federal law. But Governor Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, says canceling the registration of suspected non-citizens has been state policy for 18 years. All right. Yeah. So first of all, can a state say, not only a sanctuary state, we're going to let illegals vote in our federal elections. And what do you think about this Virginia situation?
So two things. First of all, federal law currently prohibits illegal aliens from voting in federal elections. However, there is no prohibition on state and municipal elections. You know, you've had some of these sanctuary states, some municipalities in New York that have already expressed policy that they're going to allow illegal aliens to vote in their state and local elections, which presents the question, well, how are you going to separate that from federal elections when the elections are happening at the exact same time?
Right.
Which is why this is an issue. Now, to the state of Virginia's case, it's interesting that the Department of Justice has filed this lawsuit now, because this is, as you mentioned, Governor Glenn Youngkin has said, this has been a part of the state of Virginia's policy since 2006. It's state law, it's state procedures, and even some of the policies implemented by Governor Youngkin during his administration. This has been their policy for all of this time, which raises the question, why are they bringing this lawsuit now? States have the lawful authority to ensure that legal voters, lawful voters, participate in their elections, both state, municipal, and federal elections. So that is a feature that states employ. The thing that's so interesting to me in this, that the Department of Justice sought to file this lawsuit against the state of Virginia, is that in Virginia, the removal occurs pursuant to the individuals self-attesting to them being non-citizens. So they are, through different processes like driver's license, DMV records, and other things, they check a box that says I am a non-citizen, or they do not check a citizenship box, which triggers the Virginia policy that causes those names to then be cross-referenced with their Board of Elections, and then those people are notified that they need to provide proof of citizenship in order to be able to remain on the voting rolls. And this has been in place in Virginia for years. So it provokes the question, well, why is the Department of Justice filing this lawsuit now, where they're hiding behind a post-Civil War era legislation that was meant to prevent Southern states from preventing African Americans from voting, to say that, well, you can't do that within 90 days of an election. So they waited until this point because of that 90-day threshold. But if this was an issue, why didn't they bring the case long before? And I think they are attempting to make it an election day issue to try to prevent states like Virginia and others to exclude non-citizens from participating in federal elections.
Abe, here in Mississippi, where you live, when you go to vote, you have to show your driver's license or some kind of ID. I guess you could show up.
What an idea.
Yeah, I know. and I'm just thinking, of course, I'm thinking, don't you have to do that in every state? I mean, why wouldn't you? Otherwise, people can potentially vote and not be the person they say they are. And then they vote, yeah. And then they're out the door, and then the next person comes in 2 hours later and goes, I'm here to vote. Oh, sorry, you already voted. I mean, that kind of thing. Yeah. I know that sounds a little far-fetched, but you do that if you do that kind of by mail, and you get three ballots at your box, and your dad died, and you know what I'm saying? And you fill out his, yeah. I mean, it's just kind of, I know this is sounds crazy to some people, but I'm asking you, do you know how many states have an ID and or don't have an ID? Do you know the breakdown at all on those?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number, but there are states that explicitly do not require an ID.
Why wouldn't you?
You know, which is a great question. It's also interesting, in order for you to get actually into the DNC convention, you have to show an ID in order to get in.
If you're a state and you don't require an ID to vote, then you're for voter fraud.
Well, that would be California, New York, Pennsylvania.
They're for voter fraud.
Nevada, Oregon, Washington.
Do you have that? Are you looking at them on your screen?
Yeah, I'm looking at them on the screen. Yeah. So you've got...
Yeah, they're like Wesley's saying, there are states that explicitly stated that they will not require ID for...
So don't
for
you election. Bring that. You could get in trouble for bringing your ID.
This is
insane. I'm sorry. I interrupted you, Wesley. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. You're good.
Yeah.
Illinois is another one. Minnesota is another one. That's ironic right there. Minnesota,
California. They're all blue states. Yeah. They're all blue states, and they're... And then
some of them, a handful of them, don't require a photo ID, but they require some ID. But then the obviously the ones in the South, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and then Florida.
You show your driver's license or your you can have people have passports, driver's license, they have Social Security cards. I mean, there's something to show you are who you say you are. I mean, that just would they do that at any other event? If you were to tell these Democrats who are in favor of no ID, if you were to say, okay, you're going to have a like you said, Abe, we're going to have a Democrat National Convention, and y'all come, and we're not going to check IDs. You think they would do that?
How about
this? No, they didn't do that.
You don't have to have an ID to buy a gun.
Think
they jump on that?
Think they go I like for that? That's it. A good point, Ed. Duly noted.
I believe that's a lot closer to the Second Amendment. I think actually. So
that was a quote of the day.
That's right.
Show right
here. It was very astute, wasn't it?
That's very astute.
It really was.
All right.
Go
ahead, Abe.
The only thing I would say is, you know, there are people that are challenging the state of Virginia and Governor Glenn Youngkin, what they're trying to accomplish. And he, in response, asked a simple question. If you have people who have identified themselves to you as being non-citizens, should they stay on the voter rolls if they've already affirmed to the state that they're not citizens?
Should they
stay on the voter rolls?
Yes.
Because that would be a violation of federal law in addition to, as in the state of Virginia state law.
Yeah. All right. Well, Abe, what do you got coming up this afternoon on the Hamilton Corner?
Well,
do you know yet?
I have competition today because there's this profound interview that's going to take place at the same time I come on the air this evening. You might have heard about it.
Yeah, Harris B. Bear.
No. Yeah, and you know, and I grew up in a middle class family, Tim.
I know.
The cloud is above us, huh? And, above us.
And Trump.
Oh man,
that was
closer than we tried earlier.
That was pretty close to the witch on the Wizard of Oz.
That's what I was thinking. That's Wicked Witch of the West stuff right
and
there.
And your little dog, yeah, too. Yeah,
yeah. All right. Bye, Abe. Yes. See you, brother. Take care.
All right.
Take care of you and your, you and your whole family.
And my little kids, too.
All right. That's Abraham Hamilton III, who has like six, right?
He does. I think he has exactly six.
You said like six. So that could be seven or five.
So he said exactly. So yeah. I was going to say, how do you fragment your children there? Five and a half or six? He has the average. Six children, the little Hamiltons, which will be blessing our country before long.
Yes, they will.
And
that is a smart bunch of children.
I've said it
on the air before. The day that Abe told me that he and his wife Maria were teaching their kids Latin,
yeah,
I thought all these kids are going to be doctors or lawyers.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're gonna outnumber the atheist before long. Do you think so?
Yeah. Now we won't have as many cats as they do. You know,
that's fair.
Single women with cats.
Yeah.
By the way, I am not mocking single women with cats.
Yeah, you were.
Well, I kind of was, but I was mocking not amongst our listeners who have their heads on straight. I was talking about the secular progressive single women with cats.
Which I knew that's exactly what you were talking
Thank
about.
Thank you.
You didn't even have to explain it to me.
You're the man.
You're welcome.
I shouldn't even talk about that.
Go ahead. I don't mind. Go. What do you say?
I just don't get the.
You still got 7 minutes to hang yourself, so you may want to wait toward the end.
Anyway.
You know what?
Cats as pets, they don't.
I'm with you, brother.
They're not pets for Haitians, though.
I don't have anything against cats. They just hang out, walk around. And
I'll tell you what.
They don't greet you at the door. Like your little dog does, and welcome you home. That's a feeling you get from your pet. For the cat, it's just like
cats are like teenagers.
Cat may just look at you and then go back to whatever it was doing. Go ahead.
Cats are like teenagers. Okay. They only come over when they need something. They pay attention to you, and that's it. You feed them. You take care of them, but they could care less if you're in the room.
There's no emotional attachment.
Dogs
to a cat
are like kids. When you come home and your kids, daddy,
yeah.
daddy.
Yeah.
I heard a great line. Yeah. I'm not recommending this, but I heard someone once say, if you really want to know who loves you in your family, then lock, put both your dog and your wife in the trunk, and then when you open it, you tell me who still loves you. The dog is going to be happy.
Yeah, you just don't want to put your wife in the trunk while the sheriff's deputy drives by. I think you're going to have a problem right there.
Please, I know we have about 10% of you are literalists out there.
And it was a joke.
You think I would put my wife in the trunk? No, I would not.
No, you wouldn't.
But it was a funny line.
Well, what?
You've managed to insult teenagers in the last 2 minutes.
Right.
Cats also, are like teenagers.
Also, single ladies with cats.
Single ladies with cats.
Secular progressives, though, only.
Right. All right.
Well, and then I insulted the rest of the women by implying it's okay to put your wife in the trunk of the car.
Ed is aware that our producer, Brent, is compiling a best of.
Yeah.
Ed, he is not.
Insults.
No, he says he is, but he isn't.
It's the next premium for the next Charathon.
All right, Wesley, hey, what were you going to say, Wesley?
Well, while y'all are joking, I'm working over here, and I just cannot get past this Oregon no ID required. There's other states, but just listen to this. Ready? Are you ready? If
Oregon, you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
If voters cannot provide voter ID, this information, which is an ID card, so they don't have to have photo ID, then they can print off and sign an online registration form and mail it into their county election office to complete this registration. This is Ballotpedia. So you go online, you print off a sheet of paper, and you sign it, and you mail it in, and that's your form of a...
That gets you registered.
What could possibly go wrong there?
And you know the irony of this?
Oh, that's...
If that person goes to the airport in Portland, Oregon, do you think he's going to get on an airplane?
Right. I printed this out at the house.
Yeah.
And that, officer, and I, and TSA.
This
TSA.
Proves.
Right.
And I've signed it, and I've approved myself.
Yeah, I've approved myself. I can verify all the information I wrote down right there.
I wouldn't lie to you.
That's right, yeah.
That's just, anyway.
All right. I can't get past
but
it.
So there are, how many states, Wesley, have no ID for voting?
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And they're all heavy blue states. Almost purple. I mean, almost
we're
like
insanity rules.
That's right. Exactly.
I would just say.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. 14 say you don't have to print off, sign anything. You just got to show up.
Yeah. Well, anyway. All right, so I got much more I could say there.
We all do.
But, all right.
Next story.
Fred, you got another issue before we?
Yes.
Do you have issues, Fred?
Yeah, I've got issues. I've got a stack of issues here.
Ed's a compassionate man over here. He'll be glad to.
Bring it.
Okay. All right.
I will weep.
Headline yesterday, Biden-Harris administration threatens Israel with loss of weapons funding. All right. I think this is going to be an issue for a lot of folks, the treatment of Israel by the Biden-Harris administration. This is just 20 days before the election. They are threatening to remove weapons funding to Israel. They say Israel is not opening the doors wide enough for humanitarian aid. They are giving Israel 30 days, and if they don't open that door for what they're calling humanitarian aid, we're going to cut off weapons funding.
And this is humanitarian aid into Gaza.
Into Gaza.
Yeah, this is extremely serious because Israel, I don't know how dependent they are, but they do depend on the U.S. to replenish their supplies for the Iron Dome, et cetera, parts and other ammunition. And for the U.S. to say, you do what we say or we're cutting that off. I'm just telling you, the policies we've seen from this administration are sad, sickening, and evil.
Well, dangerous.
Double talk in many ways. Biden and Harris, they want to say, we're for Israel's right to defend itself.
Yeah.
And then the next day they go, but Israel, you shouldn't be defending yourself.
Right.
Huh? Because you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? All right, we're going to take a short time out right here, and we'll be back with more of today's issues after this break for news. See you back here in a few.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.